Welcome back.
It's Jacqueline.
And Alana.
I forgot my name.
Hey guys, welcome back. It's someone.
And we're back for another episode of Black and Yellow.
Hi.
All right.
Summer's here.
Full swing.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know if we've hit double digits. 90s?
No.
Triple digits.
Not yet. But this coming up week is going to be hot.
Yeah, we're definitely in the 90s. We're kissing the hundos.
We're kissing the hundos. Mm. Actually, no, I would rather not kiss the hundos, but, you know.
I mean, I don't mind it. It's an excuse to hang out by a pool. I also like the heat.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the heat. I get sort of, like, exhausted by the heat sometimes, and then I become sort of ineffective.
Yeah.
Throughout my day.
I think that's pretty universal.
Yeah, and then it'll, like, be 3 in the afternoon, and I'll be like, a nap sounds good.
Yeah, the sudden urge for, like, a hearty midday nap is real during the summertime.
Real.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how people who live in, like, New York and Chicago, like, very hot places with some humidity kicked in there.
Yep, I know what it's like. I was in Boston for July 4th, and the first couple days I was there it was so humid. It felt like I was back in Taiwan. And then it rained. It broke the heat, and it rained for like 5 hours. Just bizarre. Yeah.
Got it.
Things that we'll never have here.
Yeah, I was in Nashville for the 4th, and the same thing happened. There was rain in the break, like, to break up the heat, but it was humid all the way through.
Yeah.
But...
Just
I don't know.
Climates.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Desert. It's a desert here. So desert, desert weather.
Nice and dry. Good for the lungs, I've heard.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wonder why.
I think it keeps them dry, like the mucus out of them. I think that's why there's so many like older retirement homes or retirement communities in places like Palm Springs.
Oh.
Like that's just an oasis out there. And I think that's a big part of it.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't have very good air quality in general in California because of all the smog.
I don't think cities in general have good air quality. Like, I don't think New York has amazing air quality.
No.
I don't know about Chicago's. Yeah. I don't know much of Chicago, to be honest with you. But New York and LA, they definitely have terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too much emission.
Anyway.
We're talking about gas.
To the start of the show.
Yes.
We're talking about something very sexy today. Kind of.
Bare. Yeah. Revealing.
Very nude.
Very nude.
Naked.
Naked. Yes, today we're going to be talking about nude, but not the kind of nude you might be expecting or you might want from us two ladies.
Mm-hmm.
The
Unfortunately
other kind
not.
Of nude.
The political nude.
Let's get political here. The un-PC. The un-PC nude. So this has kind of been around for a while. It sort of was sparked by a 2010 sort of moment with Michelle Obama where she went to go meet the Indian prime minister wearing... a strapless, beautiful gown. And the designer...
Naeem Khan.
Naeem Khan, yeah, described the dress as nude. But it was not nude because Michelle's color was much darker than the dress. And that kind of had sparked the entire sort of uproar on what is nude? Is nude racist? There was quite a bit of articles on it. And then we had actually been talking about this several times.
Yeah.
You were the first person to kind of, I don't know what accent that is, kind of like open my eyes to what nude was. Because I think we were talking about something like being young.
Mm-hmm.
And I never forget this. You told me you were like, when you were young, you could never find a Band-Aid that was the color of your skin.
Correct. This is correct.
And I remember like in that moment, I was like, whoa, that's so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
I had never really known what that's like because I'm not white, but I do have much fairer skin than you.
Yeah.
And so, of course, I'm sure I never questioned the color of Band-Aids because they were, even if it was not the exact tone of my skin, it still wasn't so different.
It was a close enough match that it wasn't
that I wasn't
noticeable. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I mean, I could like I literally imagined you like as a 5-year-old kind of staring at your knee, you know, with the Band-Aid on and being like, this is weird. Shouldn't it be the color of my skin?
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, before there was nude, there was flesh colored.
Yes.
That's what I remember Band-Aids being so specifically. But in terms of nude all around, I feel like growing up there were certain markers of exclusion, especially when it came to fashion, beauty, and then more everyday products, i.e. like Band-Aids or hosiery.
Yeah, definitely.
But yes, if, as a young girl of color who was rough and rowdy and would often scrape her knee, it never ceased to amaze me that the Band-Aids that were available at the time, the flesh-colored Band-Aids, were never my flesh. And sometimes my mom would slap some makeup on it just to like even out the tone.
Mom, Maggie.
Well, because think of the irony of like a darker girl with a pinkish white sort of pasty adhesive Band-Aid.
I'm thinking of like all the little black girls in the world.
Yeah.
Being like, huh.
Right. Or those of us that grew up dancing, think about like dance hosiery, dance tights, ballet shoes.
That's all nail polish, lipstick.
Yeah.
The fashion and the
bras.
Beauty, fashion and the beauty industry probably are sort of the, get the most heat. And I think are sort of the ones that kind of, like center of attention on this because, you know, it's about color and texture and all that stuff, right?
Definitely.
Like, you're not going to go buy a nude car, although you can if you want like a beige or tan.
True.
But like the car industry was not going to have that problem, right?
No, definitely not. And, but I think when we're talking about the idea of nude in terms of a hue, we're talking about essentially inclusion and certain markers of inclusion that for people that have the privilege of being able to wear a flesh-colored Band-Aid or an invisible Band-Aid.
Or never question it, though, too.
Right. Or never question what nude or neutral meant.
Right.
Because in my world, in the black world, nude and neutral were, or flesh-colored, were all synonyms for, like, pink, beige, white skin.
Right.
Across the board.
Across the board.
And so we learned very early, again, this is how society tells us that we are different from...
As young girls.
Yeah, is that there aren't these basic, I guess...
Well, yeah, right, because they are, like, basic necessities. As we're talking about, like, undergarments or, like, little camisoles underneath, whatever. Or Spanx, you know?
Absolutely.
Or tights or anything that are going to be sort of the, you know, the undergarments of the foundations of your outfit.
Right.
Or literally foundation for your face.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
You can't, like, I struggled for a while. I mean, I wasn't very much into makeup. Maybe I didn't try too hard. But even I struggled to, like, walk into a CVS and find something just for my skin. But this time around when I was in Taiwan in the summer, I walked into, like, similar version of a CVS over there, and I found the exact tone for my skin.
Yeah, it makes you want to like fall down to your knees and start crying because you feel seen, because you feel included. Listen, I would love to have an experience like my white friends did in high school where they can just walk into a CVS or a Walgreens, head to the makeup station, find a color that works, find perhaps a colored eyeshadow or something to complement, like a bronzer or a concealer that works, and walk right out. That was never my reality.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Not only because, listen, big cosmetic corporations like Estee Lauder and CoverGirl didn't start making foundations for women of darker colors till the 1980s.
Right.
So there's just like decades of women beforehand that are like, what am I supposed to do? Or had to...
If they didn't have options or see options or, you know, there's also some sort of, not education, but it's like, I would not have known. I would have maybe done it eventually if I was desperate, but I would have gotten like a bunch of different colors and mixed it and made my own color eventually.
Yeah.
But how do you do that if you don't even understand color or undertones or, you know, like a cooler, a warmer? There's something about colors. It's like painting.
Absolutely. Right? And like black women have been mixing their colors for years.
I bet.
The downside is that gets really expensive, especially when you find, you know, when you find a good foundation or a good concealer and it like texturally it works for you. It wears all day. It sort of checks all your boxes.
Breathes.
All of those things. And then having to buy two or three to get the right color.
Yep.
And knowing that that's not a reality for white women. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a reality for, I would say, brown women as well. Like Hispanic, Latinos.
Yep.
But Spanish women as well. But I don't know. It's about belonging and feeling seen.
Yeah.
And so the Band-Aids always stuck out for me in that way. Like, whose flesh? Well, it's not mine. Yeah. Therefore, I am not the default go-to flesh tone.
But you're not.
I'm not.
And I'm not either. You
exactly.
know? It's like me going to Toys R Us at 5 years old and being like, I want a baby. Like, I want my own baby. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows. But, like, I want my own baby. But why are all the babies at Toys R Us blonde and blue-eyed?
True.
Like, I'm so confused. Like, why don't I have a baby that looks like me? Because I exist.
Absolutely.
I'm in this world.
Right.
Right? So...
Because that's that sort of everyday racism that exists.
Culturally embedded.
It's also systemically embedded.
Yep.
And it especially is in play with these large corporations that are supposed to feed, that are supposed to serve the needs of everyone, of society as a whole.
Yeah, but they don't end up doing it, because what they end up doing is it's white people making things for white people.
Because they assume that that's the more profitable, like that's the...
Yeah. That's
their
about
demographic.
Money. Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
So if we can make something for white people because we know we're going to make X amount of money, why are we going to put more money into production to make more money? Why are we going to put more money into making this product that's only like 5% of the pie, which is Asians, or 10% of the pie, which is black people, because mm-hmm. that costs more money. So why don't we just do it for the masses?
And I do think that times are changing in that regard.
Oh my God, we've come so far.
I think we've come really far.
It's great.
Especially since that Michelle Obama moment of 2010 when nude became a conversation.
Yeah, definitely. There's just more awareness.
For sure.
You know, people looking more at companies and corporations as far as their practices mm-hmm. and how generous and the language. Like, language has a huge effect on people. You know,
definitely. I would say that living in a viral age has also made this, has also shown a light and made the conversation of nude and the need to open up and include all a lot more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guarantee
agree.
You this problem was around in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 70s.
We can't be the first ones talking about it.
Definitely not. But technology wasn't around back then. So mm-hmm. the option to pay attention or not was a very real option. Mm-hmm. Now you can't ignore the noise.
Mm-hmm. But also now I think you have, you know, you did like, we had a black president. We had a black first lady, you know, before then, never before. Now you have people in power who are people of color, and mm-hmm. that also never happened before, you know? So I think times are changing, and I think it's that sort of idea of, like, you know, powerful people of color being in place and creating that movement, because it's kind of like, it's a weird analogy, but it's sort of like this whole Asian American Hollywood thing. It's like, white people are going to tell white stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly don't want white people telling Asian stories, because
I
they
get
don't
that.
Understand the Asian experience. They mm-hmm. don't understand what it's like to be Asian, because they're not. I'm not being racist. That's just the truth.
That's the truth.
And now, for the first time ever, we're actually having Asian people telling Asian stories.
Right.
Asian directors, Asian artists. Now you're having people, you know, like Rihanna mm-hmm. creating a makeup line. You're having people of color in corporations that are, you know, being hired and are creating the need for this to happen, because now people are looking at companies and seeing if they are diverse.
Right.
If they are all inclusive, because now that's important,
mm-hmm.
which maybe before then it wasn't.
Yeah, I think we're also living in a radically transparent time. And when I say radically transparent, I mean we are demanding transparency.
You literally took the words out of my mouth. And demanding, like, pretty harshly, too.
For sure.
Like, no fucks given, like, this generation of...
Yeah. But we're also living in a really radical DIY time, it feels like.
Yeah. Remember, like, we didn't have, like, YouTube makeup tutorials. Like, YouTube didn't exist when we were growing up.
No, you had your friend who was really good at makeup. Yeah. And if you were lucky, she would tell you
if
how
you
to
even
do
had
a cat
friend.
Eye.
Even if you had a friend that I didn't have friends that were good at makeup.
Oh, I went to an arts high school. There were plenty of girls that,
lost.
Like, were amazing at makeup. Absolutely.
Lucky you.
That were just great, and they did it like it came second nature to them.
Yeah, right.
I was so
those girls existed. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree.
So nude. I mean, in order to, for me to wrap my mind around why this, how this conversation came to be, you know me, I had to look up the word nude in the dictionary.
Yes.
Because Lord knows, I like
you like definitions.
And I like etymology.
Who doesn't?
So nude, in a technical context, means nude implies that you are simply unclothed. Like,
yes.
Period.
Like, if you go on Google and you type in nude, you're going to find pictures of naked people.
In terms of art, or just in terms of, like,
both. Like if photos you, yeah, of like people. You might end up, you know, yeah, photos of people, just nude people who are bare.
Well, because in art, nude and naked are two different things.
Ah.
Yeah. So naked in life, outside of art, just implies that a person is unprotected or vulnerable.
Okay.
So oh, like it can that. Also mean unadorned with embellishments. So I like see. The naked eye or the naked truth.
I see.
But in the context of art, if we're talking that, then nude is actually, let me find it. Nude means being posed in a certain way that is tasteful or portrayed in a tasteful way.
That's true.
Naked is being vulnerable while unclothed, but might be trying to cover one's self.
Yeah, I mean, you go see nude models, like when you're gonna like figure draw. Like I know my brother when they were in art school too, they would always call them like nude models.
Right.
They would never call them, oh yeah, she's naked.
Exactly. And like you can think of Michelangelo's David statue or Leonardo da Vinci's The Vitruvian Man for examples of male nudity. And also male nudity tends to show power versus female nudity, which tends to show sexuality. Like Botticelli's Birth of Venus.
Yep.
Sort of a thing. I also, as a weird, just a side note, there was an old humorist writer named Louis Gizzard who had a funny quote about naked and naked. And he would say, naked is when you ain't got no clothes on, but naked is when you ain't got no clothes on and you up to no good.
Yeah, I love that.
I just had to throw that in.
That's so good.
I just had to throw that in. I wanted to bring up the art lens for a second because so much of classical art is generally white models.
Yeah.
Not models of color. And if they're models of color, they're certainly not, in terms of what we think of as classic, fine, or high art, they're not super high on that register.
Well,
they're not super high in our consciousness.
I also think back then, I don't know what era we're going to be specific in, probably not, that we're going to be pretty general here.
I'm just talking pretty general.
Yeah, but I think even back then, in that classical era, Black people weren't in a place of...
No, but feeding into
status.
How we look at nude in terms of a color...
You take white.
Yeah, for sure. Because here are the first examples worldwide of what nude or naked or naked looks like. Like this is what it is. And it's all white skin and it's all white people. I think that's how we got there.
Mm-hmm. I see. You mean like the roots of how we've become or how the progress of nude.
Yeah. Associating creamy white alabaster pale skin with nude.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, even when you say it, I think of white.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Totally.
And a total void of color 100%.
Totally. And I mean, I've spent many, many a times in museums looking at those classical paintings of white women.
Absolutely.
Because they're there.
Be it naked or be it nude.
Yeah. Right. Got me.
I just wanted to get that out there. So in terms of nude and who nude belongs to or why band-aids and flesh-colored band-aids are important, there actually is a racial theory out there about the invisible knapsack. I think I've talked about this very briefly on the show.
I heard it for the first time from you.
Yeah, so Peggy McIntosh, it was in the late 80s, she coined this phrase. She was doing some racial study, and I'll actually mention her words directly. She says, thinking through unacknowledged male privilege as a phenomenon, I realized that since hierarchies in our societies are interlocking, there was most likely a phenomenon of white privilege, which was certainly denied and protected. As a white person, I realized I had been taught about racism as something which puts others at a disadvantage, but had been taught not to see one of its corollary aspects, white privilege, which puts me at an advantage. I think whites are carefully taught not to recognize white privilege, as males are taught not to come to see white privilege as an invisible package of unearned assets, which I can count on cashing in every day, but about which I was, quote, meant to remain oblivious. White privilege is like an invisible, weightless knapsack of special provisions, maps, passports, code books, visas, clothes, and blank checks. Describing white privilege makes one newly accountable. As we in women's studies work to reveal male privilege and ask men to give up some of their power, so one writes about having white privilege must ask, having described it, quote, having described it, what will I do to lessen or end it all? I try to work on myself, at least by identifying some of the daily effects of white privilege in my life. I have chosen those conditions, which I think in my case attach somewhat more to skin color privilege than to class, religion, ethnic status, or geographical location. Though, of course, all of those factors are intricately intertwined. Mm. And so she essentially went to bed thinking on the question of how does my white skin benefit me? Mm-hmm. And she said that throughout the night she would get up and write and just go back to sleep. Mm. And she amassed a pretty radical list.
Yeah, that was great.
Of how her white skin benefits her. There's a lot. I'll put this in the show notes because there's a ton of points. I think there's like 50 in all. 50. Not going to read them all, but I'll read a couple. So, number one, I can if I wish, arrange to be in the company of people of my race most of the time. I can be pretty sure that my neighbors in such a location will be neutral or pleasant to me. If I should need to move, I can be pretty sure of renting or purchasing housing in an area which I can afford and in which I could afford to live in. So, like, pretty basic stuff, right?
Yeah, pretty basic stuff that it doesn't, like, that it really just comes down to the color of your skin.
Right, but then she gets sort of deeper with it. She said, if I want to, I can be pretty sure of finding a publisher for this piece on white privilege. I can be pretty sure of having my voice heard in a group in which I am the only member of my race. I can be casual about whether or not to listen to another person's voice in a group in which he or she is the only member of his or her race. So she kind of threw this, it seems like as her thinking on this topic gets deeper, so do her realizations on how her white privilege has benefited her and carried her through life.
Yeah, just by simply being white.
Right, exactly.
Right. And not by getting a PhD.
Not by, quote, working hard, because wouldn't we all like to think that we arrived at where we are in life simply by the hard work, blood, sweat, tears that we've put forth for...
Doesn't work that way.
No, definitely. Nope. But taking the invisible knapsack to a more myopic view, that's the band-aids for you. Like, the invisible knapsack is the band-aids. The invisible knapsack is the nude-colored hosiery or nude-colored dance tights or...
Nail polish.
Or foundation or underwear or shoes. Like, that's all the invisible knapsack at work. The fact that we as women of color, all color... have to fight extra hard for the basic essentials or for the sheer belonging via these big companies that are marketing products to us.
Right. But they're not marketed. They aren't.
Right. Exactly. Yes. They're not. And we wish that they were. Right, because products, which are marketed to flesh colored people, i.e. white people.
Right.
Or people that fit into the one shade fits all. Yes. Remember that saying back in the day?
Ridiculous.
Like, if you don't fit one shade fits all or one shade fits most, which is crazy to me. You have to work extra hard to get these basic goods, services, general feeling of belonging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which you don't question as a citizen of America or of any. And then you kind of do. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, I sometimes, not that I struggle, but I realize like I'm not necessarily from here because my family immigrated here. Mm-hmm. So there is sometimes that sense of like, let me just remind you.
Right.
Like, you're really not from here.
Right.
So go back. So, you know, it's a little bit, or like, let me just remind you, you guys were slaves for a long time and therefore don't deserve to, you know, like, I don't know.
Let me just remind you, you're not the target audience.
Yeah.
You're not the demographic bringing in the most money.
Right. You really don't matter that much. Mm-hmm. So we really don't care about you. And that's really it. You know, it's like, we can't make money off of these people.
Right.
So
no,
why?
Totally.
So I get it. I get it. If you're just simply talking about greed, you know.
But I mean, that's also not technically true, because look at our cosmetic companies specifically, I think, have seen the most increase in this particular field of nude and what is nude and who is nude.
Yep.
You've got who lines like, I mean, Rihanna's Fenty Beauty.
Yeah.
You've got Huda, H-U-D-A Beauty or Huda Cosmetics.
Uh-huh.
Another line for women of color that are killing it. To me, it's, and then MAC. the OG classic for, I would say, black girls.
Latina.
That grew up in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. And before that, there was Fashion Fair. Mm-hmm. And Fashion Fair was had all of the foundations for African American women because it was geared to us. It was marketed to us. And so even though all of these big fashion and cosmetic lines have expanded in terms of colors, the black community never forgets.
Of course.
And we stay loyal to MAC and we stay loyal to Fashion Fair because they had our backs when Estee Lauder and CoverGirl didn't.
Yeah.
And when Fenty Beauty wasn't around.
Right, exactly.
But now everyone's jumping on the Fenty Beauty bandwagon.
Right, or the Kim K's and the Kardashian lines.
Do they have colors for everyone?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they, like, good?
I don't know.
I hate to ask like that, but... Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. I personally don't wear too much makeup already in general, but they...
I'm just surprised they have an extended color line.
I don't know if they do, but I'm pretty sure they're going to be smart about... I mean, they have like... Kim K has like half black and half... What is she? Armenian babies? I'm pretty sure...
That they're wearing makeup
as
already?
As a mom. No, she's going to think of like... She's going to see her like darker colored skin baby and... I don't know. I'm just thinking like on like the mother aspect and as a designer or a creator.
Let's hope.
I would like to.
Let's hope.
Think so.
Those cosmetic lines did not pop up in my research, to be honest with you.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even research.
Those were not the go-to cosmetic lines that were mentioned.
Of course. Yeah.
But let's hope. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Let's pray.
Yeah. Did you run across that the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition before? Used to be.
I did not. I went down the Crayola crayon rabbit hole.
Yes.
So but I'll let you let
way,
me know.
Way, 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 way before. I don't remember when, but if Merriam-Webster actually changed the definition of nude.
Oh.
It used to be before all the upheaval and all the uproar of nude.
Mm-hmm.
It was. I'm kind of paraphrasing here because my notes are a little messy, but it was of relating to a white person's skin.
Ah, I see why that got a lot of upheaval.
Some sort of that. And they got a huge backlash and they ended up editing their actual definition.
Ah, yeah. Crayola did something sort of similar because I didn't realize Crayola had a flesh colored crayon. I didn't realize. That must have happened post me being a child playing with crayons. But yeah, they came under fire as well because their flesh colored crayon, which is actually just their peach colored crayon.
You're right.
And Crayola said that they...
Growing up, I had always used peach and I never knew why.
Yeah. Well, I think Crayola low-key does that a lot. Like renames crayons.
Okay.
With existing colors.
Okay.
So, and I think that's what happened. I think that they slapped the peach off, put flesh on, and their statement was that they were creating a crayon that was the color of your palm.
But you and I have very different colored palms.
Right. That was their reason
for naming
it flesh.
We're literally just staring at our palms right now.
Like, That was the reason they called it flesh. Obviously, there was a backlash because when people think of flesh, they think of skin tone.
Yeah.
The top part of your hand.
Or ideally, like, neutral. Or, you know, like...
Yeah,
not
but
neutral,
like,
but, like, neutral is a color... Your neutral is different than my neutral.
Very, very
you know
much
what I mean?
So. Yeah.
And, like, nude, they do... Like, there was this great phrase that someone... I was, like, in a bunch of articles, but they said, like, nude is a state of being and, like, not a color.
Interesting.
Which I thought was really interesting to just sort of it be taken out of context of, like... You're nude or you're posing nude
right.
or it's like...
You have no clothes on
right.
or a color, a hue or a color.
Yeah, versus it being sort of this term that is just so general. And, I mean, the fashion industry is getting better. Was it Christian Louboutin who did his, like, thing?
Yeah.
And he was like, your own color of nude. Like, he added a couple of
Yeah, I think they were called Les Nudes, actually.
Yeah,
let me
like
see.
He did a line of...
The Nude Collection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Nude Collection of flats and heels ranging from deep to pale in 2013. It sold out. I remember I remember it selling out super quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, the nude collection is dedicated to people who want to have great legs to have a great silhouette, said Louboutin, via email. So yeah, because nude colored shoes, heels, flats, your legs look longer.
Right. Yeah.
And so obviously if there's not enough nude, you know, we all want to have long, luscious legs.
Oh, hell yeah. You already got them, girl. I'm so jealous.
Thank you. But yeah. I mean, intimates are the same way because I remember
lingerie.
Yeah, like reading a bunch of fashion magazines, much to the chagrin of my parents. They probably feel like I should have been reading like books.
But you haven't changed much, girl.
Nope, absolutely not. But reading like Glamour and Elle and InStyle, and there was one more, but it's escaping me, and being pretty hit over the head with the fashion basic that you must have nude colored.
Yeah.
Lingerie and nude colored hosiery. I think the hosiery aspect might be a little bit different in 2019
nowadays,
but nude colored lingerie for sure. And I remember going to Victoria's Secret and getting a black bra, a white bra. I was with my mom, so I must have been like 13 14. Uh-huh. Think black, white, and beige.
Yeah.
And hoping that the beige was like a nude.
Oh geez.
And so I was like, okay, the black bra works great, the white bra works great. The nude bra, not my nude, but hey, these fashion magazines are telling me that this is my base of lingerie. Yeah.
I mean, I literally had that experience the other day. I think I told you I had like some time to kill in between work, and I was in Pasadena, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to walk around Forever 21 because it was just like there and close, and I just was going to do like a quick little roundabout, some colors and styles. I don't really shop there. Ever really anymore. But then I was like looking at the camis, and I was like, oh, I feel like I think I don't have a nude like under cami for like a white shirt. Like I should go and see maybe if I can find one. And you should have seen me. I was there all alone, and I was like lost because I kept looking, and I would actually kept putting them up to my skin and being like, is it just me or is this all too dark? And then I would go to another one that was like kind of like heathered and like a little lighter. And then I'd be like, is this just me or is this too light? You know, and then I just felt really stupid. And then I just like, I was like, okay, well, clearly I don't know what my nude is, or I don't know color, or they don't have my nude. And I was like, all right, I was like over it, and I just walked out.
Yeah.
And I like,
because something as simple as a cami should take 5 minutes to find.
Which took me a lot more of a confused 10.
Mm-hmm. I get it. No, I totally understand.
It wasn't meant to be. I surrendered.
I've never had to look for a nude cami. I guess I'm saving myself.
Like, you've never had to look for a nude cami?
No, I've never shopped for that before.
So you just don't wear, and you don't wear nude underneath white sometimes? You just wear white?
How sheer are these outfits that you're wearing?
Well, I just like, I like the layer of protection.
Mm-mm.
Interesting.
No.
Well, lucky you.
Thanks. But apparently I'm unlucky, because apparently shopping for a nude colored cami sucks.
In 2019?
So, yeah.
But this was at one store, guys. So, you know, don't. Maybe I just suck.
Don't say that. You don't suck.
Okay.
You know what also doesn't suck?
What?
Like the history or the history of nude and where we can go from here. Like we can only go up from here.
We can.
You know what I mean? I do have to circle back to one thing that I found in my research.
Okay.
Because I think you're going to love it. So there was a forward-thinking gentleman who was thinking about African-American skin-colored Band-Aids.
Okay.
There was actually a black Band-Aid in existence called the Ebonade.
What?
Yes, I learned about this in an article from The Atlantic from 2013. It's called The Story of the Black Band-Aid by Sebastian Malo. And from 2013, 15 years prior, a New York entrepreneur named Michael Panayiotosis, I might have butchered that, I'm sorry,
sounds
but he
like
created
disease.
The Ebonade. It was an orange, it was contained in an orange box, and the bandage, I guess, label read, the bandage exclusively designed for people of color, and they came in shades called black licorice, coffee brown, cinnamon, and honey beige.
Wow.
Now, mind you, Johnson & Johnson obviously is the leader of Band-Aid.
Many things.
Production.
Right.
I think 1 billion, or yes, 1 billion have been sold in the U.S. as of 2011, and they claim about 62% of adhesive Band-Aid sales in the United States. But Johnson recalls the day she found Ebonade in a Harlem pharmacy.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
She brought dozens of boxes for her kids, but also to pack into the first aid kits of the Harlem school where she worked as a director. She says, quote, it was a political statement for me.
Wow.
But one day, Ebonade disappeared from shelves. Yeah, and this customer reached out to the manufacturer repeatedly, and Panayotosis remembered her request. Panayotosis, who was born to a Cypress father, thought that his Band-Aids were going to be kept with the other Band-Aids. Like in the first aid aisle with the Johnson & Johnsons, they were kept actually in the Black Needs section. So they were kept in a different spot altogether. So no one knew that they existed. And so he thought that he would be doing a service to not only African Americans, but Hispanic Americans.
Yeah.
But no one knew that these
Band-Aids existed.
Band-Aids were even around. And so the company eventually folded by late 2002 out of an original lot of 1 million boxes of bandages. He had only sold around 20,000.
Wow.
So he lost his $2 million investment, including $600,000 to manufacture the product.
Oh my God.
And his company folded.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. And I found this pretty early this morning as I was researching. And so I think I'm going to do everyone a service. I think for the show notes, I'm going to try and track down this guy's information.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Because while his company is no longer in existence, there are two other Band-Aid companies that create Band-Aids for African-American skin that I want to shout out on the show for anyone that's listening. True Color, T-R-U Color, or Curad, C-U-R-A-D. They make Band-Aids for African-American skin. I've seen pictures of it online. It looks super rad.
To buy some.
I should. I am a Nu Skin liquid bandage devotee.
Oh, wow.
Because of the fact that there was no, like, I got hooked on the liquid bandage early.
Oh.
Because of the flesh color bandage. So now I'm sort of like loyal. But I think I might have to break and buy some for the next marathon, half marathon that I run.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so awesome. Shout out to those companies.
I just had to shout that out on the show. Ebonade laid the foundation for True Color and Curad.
That's great.
Y'all, go get some flesh-colored Band-Aids because I've heard they are life-changing. To look down and not see an ugly Band-Aid.
Yeah, or to just be like, blends in.
Yeah. I have been seen and I belong and I am included.
Yeah, it's the little things.
Yeah.
It really is. They stack up.
They see me. They see me.
They know.
Fuck yes. I love being seen. I just think the world is going to expand from here because I think by 2050, as per Nat Geo, we're going to be a very diverse culture with many different tones and hues and complexions.
It's good. It's
and a
time.
New skin tone is born every day. A new complexion is born every single day.
Yeah,
in the United
I know
States.
Asians that have the same skin tone as you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I believe it.
What the hello? I mean, it's people are becoming more aware. People are becoming more educated. People are becoming more open. People are becoming more conscious about these things.
Yeah.
And people are demanding it. So
I think the demand needs to stay high.
Oh, I think it will. And especially if you involve social media and the virtualness of our world, there's no escaping.
No.
Yeah. Even if you don't want it or anywhere near it, it's going to find a way into your feed.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to find a way into your ear. It's going to find a way into your home somehow through something.
Yeah. Call to action. Lift up your voices.
Yeah.
People are listening.
Yeah.
And companies are changing.
Yeah. Get curious, too. You know, ask questions. You know, don't just, you know, kind of be like, all right, yeah, I'll just accept what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's like, fight for what you want. Fight for what you believe. If there doesn't exist, if it really doesn't exist, create it. You know, there's
the Black Band-Aid,
so many avenues now, so many people, so much money out there, so many investors, you know, just willing to give you money to believe in your cause, not even to make a profit, you know, all of that exists now. So, I mean, it always existed, but, you know, I think people are ready for all this stuff. So,
definitely.
let's just help the world progress in a better direction.
I love a colorful world.
Oh, me too.
Well, that's our show, guys. Thank you for listening. This is the Black and Yellow podcast produced by Christian Humes over at Zeitgeist.
I'm Jacqueline Chung-Young.
I'm Alana Webster.
You can follow me on the gram at Jacqueline Chung-Young. You can also follow us on Instagram at Black and Yellow Podcast.
And I am at Renegade of Fun. Please hop on over to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. It helps us to monetize this little puppy to make it grow and blast off like a rocket ship.
We're also on Spotify. Check out our show page and let us know what you think and have any questions. We love to have conversations with you guys.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.